This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
All right, Joe says we're rolling, so welcome back to 5-on-3. This is WFUV's Best of Only Hockey podcast. And we're right in the thick of it. It's December, and I'm right in the thick of two excellent, excellent voices of hockey here at the station, Tucker Austin, Lydia Perner. We have Joe Henry between the pipes. Welcome back, everybody. It's hockey season. I think we often throughout the hockey season have certain landmarks or waypoints in the season where we can start to judge how teams are shaping up. And you hear a lot of Canadians talk about this, especially on like TSN and stuff. They're like, all right, who's in it by American Thanksgiving? That's what they call it up in Canada. They call it American Thanksgiving. And that's usually the indicator of like, all right, is this team legit this year? Is it not? So I'm just going to start this episode by asking you, what is one team that surprised you by American Thanksgiving? LP?
Good or bad?
It doesn't, either or.
The New York Rangers, they're terrible.
Okay.
They stink.
Dude, I thought we would like go like a couple minutes like talking about like other at like around
like
the league
else
and like generally.
Nah, fam. To have you watched that?
Dude,
them
and
the past
but
few
they've
weeks?
Surprised
no, just
you
band-aid
the
off
of
straight
any
depression.
Team.
Go.
They won the President's Trophy last year, and they're 1-7 in their last couple games. And shiver me timbers, they beat the Montreal Canadiens barely in the last 20 seconds of the game. Yeah. They stink, man. They stink.
How about the Washington Capitals?
Right? Okay.
I don't think that's surprising.
These were
I don't
the
think
answers
that's surprising.
Dude.
Okay. That is not surprising.
Okay, yes,
so surprising.
They were a playoff team last year, but I think we have to remember how bogus of a playoff appearance
minus
that actually
32.
Was.
Yes, but they had a crazy offseason.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But
they
even
did.
Then they weren't predicted to do well. Like, who thought that Pierre-Luc Dubois would be, like, the answer to their problems?
Dylan Strome.
Who thought Ovechkin wouldn't take a step back? He actually, like, got better this season. He had a blistering start before he went down. He's still out.
He's skating
with
now.
Is he skating now?
They said yesterday he's skating now, even though he fractured his tibia, which is crazy.
But that doesn't even matter because this Caps team is still pretty consistently competing in games even without him.
Like,
I mean,
you
they just beat the Devils the other night without Ovechkin.
Lydia, are you telling me that at the beginning of the year you were like, Connor McMichael's going to have a great season for
no,
the Washington
I don't
Capitals.
Think that, but I at the beginning of the season had them as a playoff team.
You did?
Potentially, sliding in.
I had
spot.
Them dropping out. Well, I thought that was a foregone conclusion.
The thing was, like, during that whole series last year against the Rangers, all I kept hearing Sam Rose and Joe McLay talk about was how great of a coach Spencer Carberry is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think coaching goes a long way, and I didn't think the Capitals were like, they shouldn't have made the playoffs last year, but I thought they got better in the offseason, like significantly to the point where they could be competitive, and I think that's, I just don't think that's that surprising.
Okay. All right. I'm willing to buy into that. That's
Maybe I'm
a
just
good
a hater
answer,
today,
Tuck.
Though.
That's more likely.
I think I've just watched this year's Caps beat the Devils twice, so I just, like, I feel like they're just better than we give them. We're better than we give them credit.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
and especially, I mean, they're not even sitting. They're second in the Metro, behind only the Devils right now. 2 points ahead of the Hurricanes, with no games in hand. By the way,
yep.
The Devils still have that like 4-game advantage on the entire rest of the NHL because they played the
Prague.
Opening series in Prague against the Sabres.
Nick Palmer's a huge Czechia fan. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
There was some weird
Czechia
bit
guy.
About Czechia in one of our last
episodes.
I like
episodes. Czechia.
He probably mentioned Czechia like 10 times.
Andrei Palat is Czech.
It's
I
called
believe.
A callback.
So.
In comedy, Lydia, it's called a callback when you reference something.
I was laughing, don't worry.
My team that surprised me is the Nashville Predators. What is going on with this team?
There's a little negative surprise for us.
They're 2 points ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks for the worst team in the Central. Same amount of games played. They've lost 4 in a row. This was a team that, from the offseason, was looking to be a favorite in the Central. If not a favorite, at least contending with the Stars and the Avalanche. And we didn't even think Winnipeg would be as good, much less Minnesota. That's a whole surprise in itself. But, I mean, with the additions of who'd they get? What, Stamkos?
Stammer in the offseason.
Marchessault.
Re-signed Juice to the big extension
Correct.
As well to start like his full franchise run with the Predators, and it's just starting out starting out rough. There, I mean, there's no other way. No other way you can really paint it.
So, I mean, you might be ending up in the realm of, honestly, like a New York Rangers style, not rebuild, but a retool.
Barry Trotz already said he'd be willing to do that.
Right, but that's what I'm saying is like is that's probably what they're facing. So anyway, some surprises around the league by American Thanksgiving, but something that is a surprise that we need to talk about is last week Macklin Celebrini was the first star of the week. Not only that, he won Rookie of the Month in November, tallying 4 goals and 3 assists in 4 games and 2 game winners. Let's not forget that. At 18 years and 165 days old, he became the youngest player in Sharks history to record a 3-point game. And any guesses on who he beat? I think Sharks legends.
Thornton?
Yeah, I was just going to say quite. Thornton.
Mm. It's Patrick Marleau.
Toronto Maple Leafs legend.
Toronto Maple Leafs legend. And yeah, I mean, despite missing 12 games, he's still third among rookies in points and is tied in game-winning goals. Guys, Macklin Celebrini is the real deal and is honestly outperforming Connor Bedard this year.
I was actually going to say that exact same thing. I kept seeing things about like the Four Nations rosters coming out, and I don't think Bedard's going to make it, but people were arguing like if you think Bedard should be in there, why not Celebrini in there instead? Because he's been better than Connor Bedard this season.
I want to make the argument here, Lydia, though, is that
I don't think either of them should make the team. Let's just say that first.
But I would argue that Celebrini has a somewhat more complete team structured around him than Connor Bedard does.
Yeah,
by a lot.
His line mates, I think, like the Sharks have some good players. They just don't know how to. They're just young. They just haven't put it together. Like when the Sharks played the Rangers, Celebrini was dynamic. I think he hit like the post twice and had a crossbar. I don't know if I can't remember if he scored or got on the board that game, but he was all over the ice. Like he was so noticeable for a rookie, more so than Will Smith. And I was impressed with him, so I can't say I'm surprised. And I got to see him last year when he was at BU against UNH, and he was like by far the best player on the ice, and still at the college level, the youngest guy on the ice. He's been the youngest guy on the ice forever, so I'm not surprised his game's translating real well to the NHL.
Yeah, he does have an excellent line, too. He plays consistently.
Zetterlund's been
Eklund
great.
And Zetterlund.
Yeah,
and Eklund and Zetterlund are two of they're the two second highest scorers on the Sharks as a team.
Yeah.
Mikael Granlund is the leading scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And assumedly he slides in occasionally for Celebrini with that top line. It's probably why he has that many points. But again, like Celebrini, if he didn't have it, he wouldn't be putting up the numbers that we're seeing with the line that he has. And I don't even think he's being carried by this line necessarily. Like the talent is certainly there, and it's not like he's scoring garbage time goals either. I mean, just the other night, he puts in an OT winner.
Yeah,
like you're not going to score goals in key spots for your team unless you're an absolute dog. And that's what I think we're looking at with Macklin Celebrini.
And you want to make the argument that like, man, Celebrini is doing it himself. You look at the line that Connor Bedard's on. He's on a line with Taylor Hall and Tyler Bertuzzi.
And Taylor Hall's having a great year, too.
There's no reason why Connor Bedard shouldn't be lighting up the lamp like crazy, and he's not. Partially that is to do with the fact that no one on that team plays defense.
I feel like the Blackhawks' top six isn't that bad. Don't they have, like, Tara Vinen on the second line,
too? And Kurashev.
Yeah.
It's really not bad, but their defense and no one back checks on that team, and their goaltending's a mess. Anything else on Macklin Celebrini?
Well, I was going to say, I've gotten into an argument about this with so many people about plus minus as a stat, but I think it matters when you're on one of the worst teams in the league. Celebrini's only a -2. And to me, like that shows that on a poor Sharks team that loses a lot of games, he's actually not on the ice for like a totally like, what's the word like that I'm looking for?
For like a majority of their their goals against.
He doesn't have a huge I don't know if ratio, I don't know what the word is. Range. Like he's not like a -15.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's only a -2, so that tells me that he has some ability to defend, or maybe his defending style is just playing offense.
I mean also part of that is the fact that the Sharks take a lot of penalties and he's not on the kill, which certainly helps him there. But yeah, I agree with that, Lydia. It's a good point. We already talked about Washington, but let's talk about Minnesota a little bit because this team is at first in the Central, and it seems like everything is going right. Not only Kirill the Thrill, first in points in the league. Brock Faber, we knew last year, was stepping up to be big. He signed that contract that big contract in the offseason. I wrote a little article about that for some Minnesota website. I even forget what it was. They just asked, and I was like, okay. And I learned a lot about Brock Faber, and he's a cool guy. Yeah, Brock Faber was big. Erickson Ek, of course, has been a staple. But how about the goaltending, man? I mean, I don't think anyone had Gus doing the things that he did.
For sure. I don't think he had his save percentage last year. I don't think it was above 900. I think it was like right below 900. And then I think the year before that, I don't think he took a high workload of games. And he's been unreal for Minnesota. He has more goals 5-on-5. Or he has that 6-on. He was the goalie that got the empty netter, right?
Yeah.
He scored, yeah. So, yeah, he's been unreal. But I think as a team, Minnesota's just like buying into John. Is John Hines their coach? Yeah, it is. John Hines' system, which is crazy to say because I think I thought he was a terrible coach because I remember his name was floated around for the Rangers job when Laviolette got it, and I was like, please no. Yeah. But I don't know. It just seems like Minnesota's buying into their system because they also are kind of injured right now. They got a bunch of guys injured.
Zuccarello and Brodin are out.
Yeah.
At the moment. So solid defensively, this team, though, and even past Faber. I mean, Middleton, obviously, on the line with Faber is great because that helps him out. But Spurgeon on the second one, I think, really makes us the top four defense wise are really solid, and that helps out Gus a lot, I think, Tuck.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you obviously have to mention Brock Faber because of the contract last year.
Of course.
But I think it just goes to show that Minnesota put its money in the right place because this kid is leading the team, all skaters, not just defensemen, all skaters in time on ice per game. At 24 minutes, 46 seconds per game.
That's his,
well in the lead. And so this kid does not get off the ice.
No.
He scores. He scores points. I mean, maybe not that many goals. He has 4 goals. I think that's pretty respectable for a defenseman through 25-ish games.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's something you can point out about the Wild, is that their defensemen aren't that high scoring because they're like one of the few teams that actually have just built pairs that are there to play defense first.
I know. Yeah, they should actually play defense.
Yeah, because Kirill will do all the work.
And you have Gustafsson behind them.
Exactly.
So actually, the defense might be giving Gustafsson, like, better looks.
I was looking at that. The low danger shots are way up.
Way up. Okay. So, but getting a little bit helped, but he still does have to stop the puck at the end of the day. Like, Filip Gustafsson, I mean, like, we can give him his flowers now, because assumedly, like, as the season goes on, I'm imagining the fall off
like
is coming a little bit.
Mean, yeah.
Yeah. He's at 2.05 goals allowed,
it's
average.
Best
in the league. 9.29 save percentage, also best in the league. And 2 shutouts this year, which is tied for second in the league only because Hellebuyck has 3.
Sure.
So just like the stats are certainly there. If the low percent or the low danger shots are up a little bit, credit to Minnesota's defense, but like again, he still does have to stop the shots. So shout out to the Minnesota Wild. I think I picked them preseason to have it was a playoff team. Yeah, we did a segment in one of the early episodes this year. It was like, pick a team that didn't make the playoffs last year to make the playoffs this year.
And Minnesota was.
And my goal was Minnesota. Yeah. It seemed so easy. And the way they're playing right now, it looks like that's going to be a perfect setup.
I agree. Talking about young players besides Faber, we'll briefly touch on the World Juniors, whose rosters were just announced. I think the highlight of it is James Hagans, obviously, the freshman at Boston College. He's just one of the players who was chosen. I mean, he has 17 points in 13 games this season and was a final cut for the World Junior Classic gold medal team. Other guys returning to the team, Ryan Leonard, Gabe Perreault, obviously, Lydia Perner.
Legend.
Trey Augustine, the goaltender for the Red Wings.
Who played really well last year in the World Juniors.
Oh, yeah. And Sam Hillebrandt as well. I don't think the Devils are sending anyone, but the Islanders are sending Danny Nelson. And
he played last year. He's
Cole Iserman.
Nelson is, I think.
Nelson is returning. Iserman's playing in his first year, so that'll be really interesting.
Rags are sending. Rangers are sending a couple
Drew
of
Fortescue
guys.
Drew Fortescue as well.
Yeah, right. Fortescue and Gabe Perreault.
Yes.
Right. We just mentioned.
Oh, yeah, just mentioned.
He's on the line with Leonard in Boston and Boston College, and those two are.
So the U.S. Will be in Group A, they decided.
With Canada.
Canada, Finland, and Latvia.
Ooh, Zeev Beam from Minnesota as well.
He's
that'll
so
be nice.
Good.
Yeah, that'll be really good.
What about Canada, though?
Yeah, Canada's going to be good. Finland, Latvia, Germany. The U.S.-Canada game will be on New Year's 31st, Eve.
31st, yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
I'm hoping to get up. Not for the game on the 31st, but maybe some of the tournaments in Ottawa. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
nice
that's
and
so
close.
Doable.
Yeah.
So doable.
Oh, you meant like actually get up there.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like get up like in the morning or
no,
something.
No. I'm gonna be at some of those games.
Actually.
Yeah. It's at the Canadian Tire Center, the Group A, with Canada, Finland, U.S.
Nice.
So, you know, love Ottawa. Great city.
Talking about a great city. It's a weird transition. And it's not even a city. It's a hamlet. On Long Island. That's right. We're starting with the Islanders today because I'm in charge of this show.
Does Elmont really qualify as a hamlet?
It does.
Really? Because it's in...
Oh, wait. No. I think Elmont is a census designated... No, it's a hamlet.
Wow.
Elmont's a hamlet. It's not a census designated place.
It's not quite a... It's not a town. It's
not, oh,
a,
it's not
municipality
a township
or
at all.
Anything.
No. This is a hamlet.
It's not part of the city? I mean, we've had that
no,
debate has existed on Twitter already.
Yeah.
In Grace
McCarran. Grace McCarran. Good Lord.
I chimed in on it.
Yeah. Did they decide on whether or not UBS Arena was in Queens or not?
I don't think they did.
I joined the argument
sure
like
Twitter's
3 hours too late, and no one ever responded back to me. And I was like, darn it.
It's
I was trying to stir
York
the
City.
Pot after it was done.
Regardless.
And usually on Twitter, people will eat that up.
Things went very well at UBS Arena on Saturday night, as I was there to attest. The Islanders get their first shutout of the year. Ilya Sorokin gets his first shutout of the year. 3-0 defeat of the Buffalo Sabres. Complete victory. I like the way that they played. I think Anders Lee and Simon Holmstrom have been two very bright stars in what has been a dim last 2 weeks. This team leads the NHL in overtime losses, as
right,
they surely
right back
do.
At it again. Like
right
they never
back
left.
At it again. Like they never left. That's what they do. They dropped one to the Capitals in OT. But this team, after the loss to the Bruins last week, 6-3, it was brutal. I think even the Capitals game, Simon Holmstrom admitted, he said, yo, I think blowing these third period leads it's getting in our head a little bit. He was the first person to say that. Before it was all, oh, we didn't execute, this didn't go right. He was the first person to say, yeah, the fact that we've let in 30 more goals in the third period than we have in the other two periods, it's probably not good. That was an exaggeration, by the way. I think it's something like 20. I asked him after the win, and I was like, Simon, like, where's the mentality at now? And he's like smiling. He's like, he's feeling good. And that's what they need. They're playing the Canadiens tonight at Bell Center. I think they're going to bring their A game, and I think this is the beginning of a new swing for the New York Islanders.
Yeah, acceptance is the first step on the road to recovery.
Thank you, Tucker.
So accepting the fact that it's kind of weird that they're blowing this many leads in the third period is
it's
a good
weird.
Thing. They can't, like, if they went any longer ignoring the fact that they like the third period was just not going well in any game that they played, they'd be going nowhere as the season goes on.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be able to adapt and realize what's going wrong with your team. So I think that's a huge step for this Islanders team, and I really like the fact that they're going on the road today. So on the road is obviously never easy in the NHL.
No,
especially the Bell Center. One of the actually
yeah,
the
especially the Bell Center. But it's an off year for the Canadiens, to say the least.
Yeah,
like the fans are just dejected up there. They really don't expect anything on the ice, and I don't think the players in Montreal expect to do anything on the ice either.
No, watching that game at MSG, the Canadiens don't look like a competitive hockey team, which shows.
I don't
that
know.
The
they played
that
the Rangers pretty competitively.
No, they didn't, though. The Rangers
the
just played really poorly.
Yeah.
Sam Montembeau is one of the fundamentally poorest goaltenders in the league that I've
he
seen
might
in a
make
long
the
time.
Team Canada Four Nations roster.
Which
though,
is ridiculous.
Because
to
he's
me.
Been he's been playing well this year, though.
I know, but I like I don't know. Watching that game was pretty brutal to
I
watch.
Think you when you watch Jonathan Quick, like the same thing. He's like everywhere, but he makes the saves.
Yeah, but Sam Montembeau doesn't always make the saves. That's been his issue for like, yeah, I know he's hot right now. Regardless, LP, something interesting happened with the Islanders. We got on a sidetrack there. In the last game, they started 7 defensemen. Pierre Engvall was, again, a healthy scratch. This is a guy that they signed to a 7-year contract. Looking so foolish. we talked to Wah before the game. Said, yo, Engvall's out. Like, why not? Why is he not playing? And he said, hey, he's been playing to the outside too much. I want to see him. So it's an effort thing. That's an effort thing. When a player's playing too far to the outside and not coming into the puck, that's an effort thing. Wah was too polite to say that, but everyone sort of read through the lines. And he also said, I'm dealing with the players that I've been given. Which means
he and
Lou are not having a good time.
Yeah.
Is anyone in Lou ever having a good time?
No, but especially Patrick Wah does not like Lou Lamoureux. Sorry, that's... Hey, I'm a beat reporter. I don't know what their relationship is like off the ice. There are indications, though, that they do not see eye to eye on certain levels. And Pierre Engvall is, I think we can say, one of those.
I think... I don't even know about, like, the effort aspect of it too, but just like, I don't know, he's kind of been tossed around. Like, it's probably discouraging for him.
What do you mean?
He gets sent down to Bridgeport, and he took it well.
Well, that's why he got sent down to Bridgeport.
But then
he was playing
back up, you're like, oh, I'm on this big contract. I'm actually supposed to be doing stuff for this team. And I think
how much more of a wake up call do you need?
I don't think you do, but I think a change of scenery too could maybe help. But nobody's gonna take that contract.
No one's gonna take it now because we took him off of his best season in Toronto. And then he played half a good season for us, and then he's dude, it's effort. It's watching it. It's tough to watch. I think it's effort. I think Wah is right there. That said, Islanders will play the Canadiens at 7 p.m. Semyon Varlamov is still day to day, as is Adam Pellick. Matt Barzal is skating. We still don't know what the timeline is on him. Same with Duclair. Still no timeline.
I want that top line back, the Islanders. I actually enjoyed watching it.
They were fun.
They were fun to watch. Dynamic.
But the fact that Lee, Holmstrom, and Nelson have really picked up the slack has been huge for this team. They also will host the Kraken on the 5th. Let's jump town, because there was a big game that happened yesterday between the New York Rangers and the New Jersey Devils. Lydia Perner, what happened in this game? What was the final? No, don't even tell me what happened. Just tell me the final score, and then we're gonna let Tucker go.
So I turned the game off
after the second period,
and it was 5-1.
That's what I asked.
And
you.
That was the final score, which
okay,
means
you're done.
Shutout third period.
All right, Tucker, go ahead. You'll get your chance.
Oh, you suck! Oh my goodness gracious! The New Jersey Devils. I can't say more.
That was a win.
About this team this year. What a absolutely incredible win for the New Jersey Devils in hostile territory in Madison Square Garden.
Markey.
Jacob Markstrom.
Let's start with Markstrom.
Stick taps for Jacob Markstrom.
We'll start from the goaltender and move our way up.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ask for anything better, right? Like, come on. 38 saves against the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I take that all day. Saved 38 of 39 that he faced. I love the percentage. I love the only giving up one goal. And it wasn't even that like ridiculous of a goal. It was like a loose puck in front that Kreider collected near the crease and just kind of put in the back of the net really easy. Not on Markstrom, I don't think, outside of like maybe smother the puck.
Yeah.
But you know, the Devils were already up by 3 goals at that point. Like, yep. You don't need to smother the puck. You can let it bounce a little bit.
Hughes said that Markstrom was their best player in that game, but I do want to give flowers to the Devils' defense. They blocked 27 shots.
Yeah, something...
including 10 on the penalty kill.
Yeah, something the Devils have been doing a lot better over the past... pretty much the past month or so, is they get in front of so many shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you saw games earlier in this season where Markstrom was getting under a lot of pressure, or even Jake Allen was feeling a lot of heat at times.
Yep.
And, like, the defense was good, like, in terms of stick work and positioning, but, you know, the pucks were still getting to the net pretty easily, and it was putting a lot of pressure on the goalie tandem back there.
Mm-hmm.
But since the Devils have started getting in front of shots, and it's not just the defensemen either, it's these are forwards getting in front. I can't tell you how many times I hear Dawson Mercer's name called when he's on a knee, and then he's, like, twisting his entire body because he just took a 90-mile-an-hour puck to the back. But, you know, like, these are the gritty plays that put the Devils in positions to win, and they've been putting them in positions to win for the past month. It's just fun to watch. And the one weird thing I will say about the Devils right now is that they seem to only be able to lose shutouts, or almost exclusively lose in shutouts.
If they don't show up, they just don't.
In
show
games
up
where
at all.
They score, I don't know what the stat is, but they were like Devils fans wanted a stat to be pulled like a week ago, I think. They wanted to know the Devils' record when they score at least a goal, because it was really, really weird and nuts how many games they had lost by shutout. I had the unfortunate displeasure of being at the Rock for their game the day before Thanksgiving against the St. Louis Blues. They got shut out 3-0 at home. They also lost 4-0 to the Lightning.
You've lost 4 games by shutout so far this year.
I was also at the Sharks game that they lost 1-0, and they also got shut out by the Flames on the road during that Western Canada road trip.
Correct.
So 4 shutouts, except the most recent shutout against the Blues was the only one where there weren't trends across games. I got that from Keith particularly. Someone asked in the post-game presser, did you see any trends between the shutouts that were maybe alarming or something that could point to why they were happening?
And he said no?
He said the first 3, yes.
Oh, okay.
There were trends across games. But for that Blues shutout, it was like completely on its own. And like really just they didn't have legs that night. But then they come out against the Red Wings. They play a hard, hard game, a revenge game in Detroit against the Red Wings after Rasmussen dropped Jack Hughes a couple weeks ago. Then they lose at home to the Capitals in kind of a weird one where, you know, you score 5 goals, but you still lose. It's kind of tough, but I think that was Jake Allen in net that night. So he got a little peppered,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I mean, that happens. Backup goaltender. Jake Allen's good, but he's not incredible. And then just coming out of the Capitals game to go across the river, first Hudson River rivalry matchup of the season.
Yep.
And you just absolutely beat the brakes off of the Rangers in their barn.
Domination.
Actually, Vincent Trocheck postgame said that's one of the better games the Rangers have played recently.
And they lost
5-2. Why did he say that?
Let that sink in.
Why did he say that?
Because we got goalied.
Oh, is that really the excuse?
No, it's not. It's not. There's no excuses for what happened last night. There really isn't.
There were a lot of people were like angry with Shesty. I'll say that. You're
looking at one.
Yeah,
of them.
Like you included, especially last night. But
yep.
All the Rangers fans I know were all disappointed with Shesty. But I was talking to Palmer. We had class right before this recording, and I was talking to him during a break in class. I was like, yeah, I don't really think that most of the goals were even Shesty's fault. I mean, I can think of the Mercer goal where they called it a snapshot, but he basically hit a hezzy shot because his stick just wasn't connected with the puck, and then his shooting motion hit the puck anyway. And how are you supposed to pick that up as a goaltender?
This is the thing about Igor. The first goal, the Jesper Bratt goal, partial breakaway.
Oh, that was Keandre Miller's fault.
Well,
all day.
But here's the thing. Yes, if there is a breakaway or a 2-on-1, I know for a fact when the play first develops, if the player shoots either 5-hole or between Igor's arm, that it is going in. Like, it's almost automatic.
You could say that about any goalie in the league, pretty much.
I think,
though, with
Igor, this has been, a thing since he's come into the league. Like, he cannot, for the life of him, save a breakaway that goes through the 5-hole.
Or non-glove side?
Yeah,
side.
And he, right. I forget, there was another goal last night. Was it, Dougie Hamilton?
It was the Hamilton
goal.
It was the Hamilton goal. I was just going to mention
that
this one.
That was a savable puck. He should have had that.
Well, I was actually going to mention that one also as one of the ones that wasn't Shesty's fault necessarily, because the original pass was meant to go to Stefan Nason, who was sitting directly in the center in front of the crease. And he just kind of whiffs on the puck. He was getting somebody was messing with him. I forget who the Rangers defender was with him. But Nason just completely whiffs on the Jack Hughes center. And it just kind of leaks away to Dougie Hamilton in a closer spot than normal. He normally hits those big one-timers from way back near the blue line. He was up almost in the front quarter of the circle in front of the goal. And I don't think any goalie in the league can get from pipe to pipe faster than Shesty tried to catch a one-timer from Dougie Hamilton. He's got one of the harder shots in the league.
But I think he had that. And this is the thing. Igor, if he truly thinks he's the best goalie in the league and wants the money, he's got to start playing like it. I know the Rangers in front of him haven't been great. I get it. But the fact of the matter is, I think there's a, like, in the last five games, Igor has let up, that he's played, he's let up like 7 first period goals.
Yep.
He's not making the clutch time saves that we've seen from him before. And that's his argument. He's like, I'm the guy, like, I'm the one that makes these clutch saves, but he's not doing this. And then the Rangers are going down early in games. It seems like every single game. Like, I was talking to my brother over break. He knows nothing about hockey, but he was like, what are the odds that the Rangers are going to be down a goal in the first 5 minutes before, I think it was the Montreal game, but I can't remember. I don't think they actually were in that game for some miracle, but it's like every game you watch, the first 5 minutes, you just know the Rangers are going to be down.
Yeah, they are not showing up.
Especially when Igor's in net, and it's just so frustrating because, again, I don't think many of the goals he's letting up are his fault, but you need the goalie to make the clutch save, and that's what I saw Markstrom do last night. There were many opportunities for the Rangers to get back in the game in that first period. That period could have ended 2-2. The Rangers had a ton of opportunities, but Markstrom made the saves.
Also, I don't think Hedl belongs on the Panarin line. I like when...
Well, they got benched at the end of the game.
Right, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I don't think it works.
So, we're going back to the original line to start
that's
the season.
Right, that's what needs to happen. Because Panarin and Lof look better with Trocheck. And I think now they're starting to realize
like,
that.
Like, Vincent Trocheck has been playing poorly this season, but he's not one of the players that I worry about. Like, I think... His style
no,
of play.
No, he scored in the last.
Yes,
he scored.
He scored against Philadelphia. Yeah. He scored against Montreal. He's played well the past few games, but he has been one of the players that has taken criticism from Rangers fans because last year he had an insane season.
Yeah.
This year he's not playing bad, and again his style is kind of like get into the dirty areas and wreak havoc.
And he's starting to do that again.
Yeah, he's,
and
like,
he's winning faceoffs.
Well, that's the thing. Like he's the faceoff guy, but defensively he hasn't been great, and that line isn't great defensively, the Panarin, Lafreniere, and Trocheck line. And it just seems to me like Trocheck for some reason is like always like waving his stick around when he's skating. I'm like, just put that thing on the ice. That's how you intercept a puck. That's why it's so easy to break through the neutral zone for the Rangers. But
yep.
I don't know. I'm in favor of like a Washington Capitals situation of what they did last year, starting to ship off some players. Because to me, the Rangers have two cores. You have this aging core, and you have this young core. You have the young core of Laff, Cooley, Hedl. Although I don't know if I trust Hedl because of his injuries. To not his fault.
Yeah.
But
like
I don't
honorary
know.
Core.
Yeah, but like you got Berard, you got Schneider, Fox. I would throw in there. Like you got guys, but I just can't keep watching Mika Zibanejad try and play hockey every night because it's.
When
I
he's
just,
not on the power play.
He's not even good on the power play anymore. He just misses his one-timers.
He's been scoring a good amount recently on the power play.
He had a one.
He had a nasty one against Montreal.
He had an excellent.
That one was filthy.
He had a good look in the Devils game.
Yeah.
One of those big, like, major saves that you mentioned Markstrom making.
Yeah.
Was that, like, I think Mika collected a pass from, like, the opposite end of the neutral zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And started working it in. He like, made, like, a weird move.
He's, like, a minus 14, though.
Yeah.
Like, again,
yeah.
Plus
like kind
minus matters
move.
When you're a minus 14.
Almost like he lost the puck for a second and then, like, regained it at the last second and tried to, like, backhand it as an emergency. And it still almost got by Markstrom, but it, like, clipped like, the top of his blocker and the bottom of his arm and went over the crossbar.
Oh, yes, I know exactly
what
you're talking
about. That was, like, the closest that I think Zibanejad got in that game to scoring, but that's one of those big saves. It was under the stick side for Markstrom, and he made the save, unlike Shesterkin, like you mentioned. And I did want to get back to your point on Shesterkin, how he needs to play better if he wants the money. Underperforming Rangers in front of Shesterkin has not impeded him in the past. Like, we've seen Shesterkin when the team in front of him isn't getting it done. It's not a, oh, I play worse because the team is bad. It's an Igor Shesterkin that is still making 35 saves a night. Or like 30 to 35 saves a night, and is basically like another offensive player. He's like firing passes up into the neutral zone, trying to create something, but this isn't what we're seeing from Shesterkin. We're kind of seeing almost a lay down and die situation.
We are, and it's on the medium danger shot attempts. It's not the low danger. He's actually dead even with Quick on low dangers. He's a good 75 points lower on high dangers.
His stats are very middle of the league.
And
if you saw the Devils' goals from last night, I think you would call most, if not all of them, like medium danger.
Yeah, because after the first, it was 4-4 high danger chances.
He is almost 80 points lower on save percentage medium danger than Jonathan Quick. Quick is at a 941. Igor's at an 876. That's the story right
there. Is it just in between? Like a struggle with the in-between looks?
It feels like, it's like...
Like he's nearsighted, he's farsighted, but he doesn't have that in-between
look. That shows it's
not...
It would be the high dangers being so far off where you would be really alarmed, and you'd be like, okay, maybe he's hurt or something, that he's not as mobile as he was.
But they're
if it was low danger, you'd say, all right, positionally, something's wrong with him. But it's neither.
Yeah.
Which shows that he's just not playing well.
We just got, like, the Steve Valiquette breakdown from Nick Palmer.
I was a goaltender, you know? We figured it out.
It's just
Igor
not good
Shesterkin.
Enough. It's not
good
really enough. Not. Mike Rupp, like, tweeted after the game. I don't know if you saw it, like, 10.5 in, like, the down trend line. That was it. That was the tweet. And I was like, damn. Yeah. Mike Rupp's telling you 10.5 with a downward trend line. You know you need to be playing better.
All right. Well, you know what? Speaking of players to play well, this is great segue
into
our
last
segue segment.
not crafted segue in any way.
I don't know if you guys have listened to our show Nosebleeds, which is about baseball, but we have a segment that I created that's called Come On Man, where it's like you pick a player.
Oh, that's,
and you
that
say,
doesn't already exist
and
anywhere.
You say, Come On Man, and it's like it can either be a good Come On Man being like, oh, like he's doing great. Come on, man. Or it can be like, oh, he's not playing well. Come on, man.
So I've only ever seen it used as like the negative.
No, it can be
come
both.
Come on, man.
If you're like trying to hype someone up and you're like, come on, man.
Come on, man.
You know?
Okay, yeah, I like that.
The whole New York Rangers roster except for Will Cooley.
But we have a new segment, okay? And it's different. It's not like someone who hasn't been playing well. It's called Set the Tone, Bud. All right? The segment is called Set the Tone, Bud. And you just got to pick a player to have a big week. And why?
What is the week that we're counting? Like a week from today?
Like a big next, or it can be a big next game. How about that? Let's do a big
next
game.
A big
next
game in particular.
Who's gonna set the tone, Tucker?
I think. Okay, I'm out of purely bias reasons. I'm only thinking of Devils players
who are gonna
have like a good week, or we'll go like good next game in particular. The Devils have the Seattle Kraken for their next one.
They
at the Rock on Friday. My colleague, my esteemed colleague, James Burley.
Oh, isn't he esteemed?
Will be on the coverage for us on Friday.
So esteemed.
Who's gonna have the big one for the Devils against the Kraken? I imagine Jacob Markstrom will start again, but I'm not too worried about the Seattle Kraken in terms of, like, offensive talent. I haven't seen them putting up too many goals this season. Honestly, I'd put Markstrom on shutout watch for Friday against the Kraken, just maybe. But you know what? Give me the captain. Give me Nico Hischier. I think he's going to have a big game. He's been playing really well at home, which kind of is, like, the opposite of what the Devils have tended to do this year. They've had flashes of better play, especially more recently at home.
Yep.
But the struggles at home have been glaring when they happen.
Yep.
But Nico Hischier has been like the exception to that, pretty much. He is consistently the guy who tries to get the Devils going at home. He had a natural hat trick in the second period. That was a home game. That was electric. So give me Nico Hischier. I'm going to guess his point total, too. I think he's going to go 1 goal, 2 assists, 3 points. First star for Nico Hischier against the Seattle Kraken.
It's a great night. Who's setting the tone for you, Lydia?
All right. I'm gonna. I have three players written down.
Will Cooley doesn't count.
Well,
is it just Will Cooley?
No. I'm not that. I talk about Will Cooley enough.
She's not that insane yet.
He wasn't one of the three.
No, because he's just been great.
Okay.
But I'm not going to do, like, we've talked enough about the Rangers. They stink. Everyone needs to be better on that team.
No.
Please.
You're going off Ranger?
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Did you want me to stay on Rangers?
No, I'd love you to pick another Ranger.
I can keep complaining about them if
you
want to.
Who's setting the tone, Lydia?
I'm taking former New York Rangers Jack Roslovic for the Carolina Hurricanes. because he has not scored a goal since November 23rd after going on that insane run to start the season.
Okay.
Hurricanes play the Kraken tonight.
Why? Everybody's playing the Kraken.
Yeah.
Islanders play the Kraken on Thursday. Carolina's got them tomorrow.
Rangers are on Sunday.
Rangers on Sunday and the Devils on Friday.
Yeah.
The Kraken are just coming through the East Coast.
Yeah,
but
they got to make the rounds.
Jack Roslovic has 12 goals this season. I think in his, 30 games with the Rangers, he had, four.
Yeah.
And I still have trauma from that empty net missed goal against Florida, but that's beside the point.
I forgot
no,
about that.
No, we're not bringing that back up. The last time I felt happiness was when Alexander Wenberg got that tip, but it doesn't matter.
And now he's thriving in San Jose.
I need Jack Roslovic to have a big game, get a goal tonight. I don't want the Hurricanes to win because they are in the Metro. Or maybe, no, I don't want them to win. But
who wants the Canes to win?
No
in the
one's
Metro?
Ever rooting for
no
them.
One.
I think Rod Brind'Amour is he's a chiller though.
I don't know.
I just don't like him.
Quiff in his hair kind of bothers me.
I don't like. Well, wait. What was the? Oh right, he looks like. It was an animated movie.
I feel like the Canes.
I have the
roster
post.
Is one of the most likable teams, but the team itself is just I hate them.
I don't like their roster
opinions.
Or their team.
You don't like Seth Jarvis?
No, you're not allowed to spread false.
They bodied the Devils in the playoffs two seasons ago, and I've really just not been fond of them ever since. Also, way back in the day, in NHL 2010. I have this weird, vivid memory of playing Carolina in a playoff series in a franchise mode of the Devils, and that was a really tough series. Didn't
why are
like
we
that.
Reliving your 7-year-old NHL
Because this
trauma.
Is why I don't like the Hurricanes, Nick.
Tucker went into his backyard after that and just pretended he won the Stanley Cup against the Hurricanes.
Yeah,
so,
started lifting a trash can.
You probably got so mad that your parents locked you out in the backyard and told you to run around until you tired yourself out. My guy who's going to set the tone is, I'm going to go similar route as you, Tuck, mm-hmm. is that let's put Sorokin on shutout watch for a second game in a row against the Montreal Canadiens. I totally buy that happening. He looked phenomenal against the Buffalo Sabres, and I see no reason why he can't do it against the Habs.
Yeah, this is Rod Brind'Amour. Looks like, what is this? It looks like Disney's dinosaur, and it's honestly pretty accurate.
He does a
it's
little
It's pretty
bit.
Close.
I'm not here for the Rod Brind'Amour hate.
Like a Brachiosaurus.
Yeah, not so basically, Devils fan here, not a big fan of Rod Brind'Amour.
Okay. The one thing the Rangers know how to do is beat Carolina in the playoffs.
All right, well, if there's one takeaway from this, Rod Brind'Amour looks like a dinosaur. Thank you to everyone for listening to this episode of 5-on-3. It's been Joe Henry between the pipes, Tucker Austin, Lydia Perner by my side. Thanks for listening, everybody. Let's have a great week of New York hockey, and Macklin Celebrini is very good. Enjoy, everybody.
Also, go Devils.